Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's EvaLynne, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. Hello and welcome to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. You're listening to Evelyn Charmer and this week's guest is Willow Holloway. She's a wonderful lady. She's the chair and an executive director of Autistic UK. And she also does various other things which she can talk to you about as well. So welcome to the show, Willow.
Hello, Evelyn, and thank you for inviting me along.
Oh, thank you for coming along. We're always really happy to have representatives of different organisations on the show. Do you want to just tell our listeners a little bit about you, aside from what you do as work?
I am late diagnosed autistic woman, parent of autistic children who've now grown up. I'm a grandparent to an autistic granddaughter. And I'm also what they now call an expert by experience.
Oh, so lovely.
I use my experience of being an autistic person to guide policy development, to guide service development, and also to provide peer support for other autistic adults. So quite a lot.
Absolutely. And we're going to unpick some of that, aren't we, through the show today. And just for our listeners, just to let you know that I'm full of hay fever, so I probably sound a bit bunged up and I'm a bit coughy today, so I apologize in advance for that. And also Willow is experiencing long COVID, so, and I'm sure there's many of you out there who can relate to that. So if we are coughing and spluttering our way through, we'll do our best to edit that out. But please bear with us as well. So we always start the show, Willow, with something that we're grateful for today. So I'm really grateful for my family. And I've spent a bit of time this weekend with my family, my mum and my siblings and my auntie and my cousin. And there's nothing like having your family around you, is there? It's something really, really, really special about that. So I'm really grateful for my family. So what about you?
I have to say the thing that I'm most grateful for today is the fact that it's not as hot as it was last week.
Yes.
It's started to rain here and it's the first rain we've had for ages. So I'm absolutely loving that because my flowers might actually bloom again.
Oh.
And I find it far easier to focus and concentrate when it's not really hot. And I suppose added to that is the fact I'm really grateful that I live by the coast. I'm on the North Wales coast, not far from Snowdonia.
Wonderful.
So I've got the best of both worlds. I've got the sea and I've got the mountains. And going out into nature is really important to me. So I do live in a very, very good place for that.
Yes. Now, I don't know. I think going out in nature is really valuable to everyone. I think we need that earth connection. But speaking as an autistic, late diagnosed woman myself, even when I was a young child, going out into the hills, going out into nature was really important for my well-being. And it still is. And I think it's a place where I feel I can really download and recalibrate. That's the only words I can think of at the moment to describe it.
I was a terrible school refusal. They call it school refusal, don't they? School non-attendance. I didn't go to school if I could avoid it, but you'd always find me somewhere out in that. I'd either took my bike and gone to the woods, or I was sat in the middle of field with cows, or I would much rather be out in the open than within a caged in environment. Yeah. And that stayed with me.
And I guess that makes sense now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Now you know that you have a neurodivergent brain, that it was incredibly stressful for you to be in the school environment, and you connected better with yourself and felt more authentic when you were out in nature and in the woods, which is really understandable. Okay, so I did mention at the top of the show then that you are the, one of the directors. You're an executive director of Autistic UK, and you're also the chair, but that you wear a number of hats, doing various roles to support the neurodiverse community. So talk to us a little bit about that and the different roles that you have.
Okay, so I do have a lot of roles. And I do. I wear so many hats that I often think I actually need more heads, and it can get quite confusing. I have to sit and think about what hat I've got on today. But I'm a director of a number of equality organisations, and they're all disabled people's organisations. So we all share the same values, and a lot of our work is very similar. So that's what means that I am able to work for multiple organisations. The first one, is Disability Wales. And Disability Wales is the national organisation for disabled people's organisations in Wales. And our big thing is that we strive to achieve the rights and equality of disabled people. We're very busy. We've got quite a big staff team, which has grown since the pandemic, because we're now able to use different methods of working. Hybrid working's been brilliant for us at Disability Wales. We engage with our members, develop campaigns, do a lot of consultations with Welsh Government, work on research and policy development, and that's all to influence that policy and change practice in respect to disabled people. Our team also provide information and training, and I'm chair of the board there as well. So our work involves, it's my work there is the strategic direction of the organisation. So I sort of focus on policy and the work plans, keeping an eye on the money that comes into the organisation and the budgets. I manage people to a degree, because I will often sit on interview panels if we're bringing on new staff. And of course, board member, that means looking at the legal compliance and governance work. That's the really boring bit. But I also get involved in projects sometimes. The most recent one, which I was really proud of, to be asked actually, was the decision-making panel for the Access to Elected Office Fund in Wales, which is a fund that assists disabled people to be able to stand for elected office. It's quite a new thing, but it's very important that people have that support, and Wales are very keen to increase representation on not only in government, but also on public boards and strategic bodies. So I feel the work's quite important there. Then, of course, you've already said about the fact that I'm chair of Autistic UK. And we're quite a lot different to Disability Wales, because we're a CIC. So we're a community interest company. And we've got a big focus on engaging with the community and then representation. But we also provide training from the perspective of autistic people. So all of our directors are autistic, and we all have slightly different skill sets. Some of us have worked in housing. Some of us have a law background. Others have a training background. But we're a very small team. Compared to Disability Wales, we're a small team, and it's our directors that actually do the work that's needed. We're all voluntary, because you very rarely get funding to actually represent people. It's not something that's easy, you can easily find funding for. But we all do so many different roles, from web design to social media content creation. But wherever possible, I focus on representation at that strategic level. And I facilitate our peer support sessions, because I went and did some training in that area, because I felt it was something that you really couldn't take on lightly. You needed to have some understanding and some skills behind you. But as I said, we all pitch in at AUK. And then there's another smallish organisation that I'm a director of, called Flintshire Disability Forum. And that's the North Wales Centre for Independent Living. So very important for disabled people. We support and empower disabled people to live as independently as they can in the community. So we provide things like befriending scheme. Benefits support is a big one, helping people fill in benefit forms and ensure that they're getting the correct benefits. A level of advocacy, and we also run some online groups from there now as well. As I said, the name suggests, it's very focused on ensuring that disabled people's rights to independent living are upheld as well. My role there is purely a director, but I do attend engagement and consultation events wherever I can. And then last, but by absolutely no means least, I'm also a director of Fair Treatment for the Women of Wales, or FTWW for short, because it's quite a mouthful. And we have a focus on the health inequalities faced by women. And I've had quite a few successful campaigns. One focused around endometriosis. We've done some work on menopause. We've done some work on support after miscarriage. And they're just a few of the areas that we look at. My role there is of director, but I also act in an advisory capacity. So in relation to autism and related neurodevelopmental conditions and how they present in women. We've just recently done some really good work. FTWW facilitated co-production of a quality statement, which is evidence that you put before government, and a call for action. So we put a quality statement to Welsh Government to improve the healthcare for women and girls across Wales. It involved co-production between 60 organisations, big organisations such as the British Heart Foundation, Endometriosis UK, I believe, was on there, Autistic UK was on there. And we put together a large document that went in front of Welsh Government, detailing all the health inequalities faced by people with different conditions. And because of that, FTWW were asked to give evidence at the Senedd, which, if people don't know, is Welsh Government. And Welsh Government then, because of that document, published a women's health quality statement. So that will go to all local health boards, telling them what Welsh Government expects from them when they're treating women. And they've also made a commitment to develop a 10-year health plan for Wales. So I think that just shows how the community voice, when it's used correctly, can really bring about change.
Yeah, what a huge amount of valuable work you're involved in, Willow. You know, it's fascinating to hear you talk about how you seem to work at all those levels, from government and policy influence right down to peer support stuff in the community, across all those different wonderful sounding organisations. So just on a personal tip, as an autistic lady, well, human being, that's not about your gender, but as an autistic person, how do you manage to organise yourself across all of that, those different roles in different organisations at different levels?
Great difficulty. Being honest, it's got better as it's gone along, because obviously it's become a habit now. I would not survive without Google Calendar.
Yeah.
That is my big go-to, and I have alerts set and notifications so that I don't miss meetings. I really could do with a PA, to be honest. But because all of the work that I do is voluntary, that means I'm not entitled to access to work. So if I was employed doing what I do, I would then be able to get a PA through access to work. But that's not, you don't get that when you're working voluntary. So that's pretty just, much that, it's been having to learn my own system,
isn't it?
It is really.
A lot of these organisations are charities and rely on voluntary directors and voluntary, you know, chairs and all the rest of it. So it seems like that's a bit of a glitch. We're going to break for the adverts and some music, and then we'll come back and continue our conversation.
That makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm talking to Willow Holloway. And if you were listening before the break, you'll have realised that Willow is a multi-talented lady. She's got fingers in so many pies that she could open her own pie shop. And she wears so many hats that she could also be a milliner. So we've been talking a lot about her different roles across different organisations. I just wanted to bring us back to a more generalised question, Willow, if I may, which is, you know, because you're working across Disability Wales and Autistic UK and various other things. What are the key issues today, would you say?
For me, one of the biggest issues, I've got to be honest, is society's view of autistic people, which isn't helped by the way we're represented in the media. There's always a lot of negative media about us, but never as much positive. We often don't hear about the really good work that's been done. What we hear about is all the challenges. And yes, they need looking at. But if you look at the way we're represented in media, it's often around the stereotypes. They talk about the stereotypes attached to autism. And that just fuels myths and it fuels misconceptions.
That
creates the stigma that you see around autism.
The tragedy or victim model.
Which
brings me on to, I mean, obviously that's why I started the show, was to try and change that view. I'm very open as to who comes on the show. I don't try to promote one view or another. But so far, by just its organic way it's unfolding, there's been so many wonderful and positive experiences being shared through the show that show that there's a massive amount of wonderful things happening, wonderful things that autistic people are doing and can do. One of the things that comes up quite regularly is a differences in opinion from people about autism being a disability. So I wondered, how would you describe autism in terms of disability?
I always look at disability through the social model, and the social model of disability is it states that it's not our impairments that disable us. It's the environment and people's attitudes. I know there's a lot of people that aren't comfortable with using the word disability or disabled. As autistic people, we are protected under the disability characteristic by the Equalities Act. And that's the act which puts a duty on employers and other services to make reasonable adjustments for us. And they're making reasonable adjustments for what is seen as our disability. So it's important that people recognise that. It'd be great if neurodivergence in itself was a protected characteristic, but that's not currently the case. So yes, we do have to go under that disability characteristic. I think one of the things, one of the reasons people don't like using the word disabled is because we all like to be seen by our strengths, and we want the same for our autistic children, which is understandable if you're just looking at things through that medical model lens of disability, which is very much a deficit model, if you like. But let's face it, disabled's not a bad word. Disabled people account for over 20% of the population. That's a lot of people. And as I said, under the social model, our impairments are not the problem. Social barriers are the main cause of the problems. And those barriers are people's attitudes, physical and organisational barriers. So it could be policy that's not set up to include disabled people, a lack of adjustments, a lack of adaptations in the environment. And we see these barriers really clearly in the autistic community through the barriers that autistic people face in education, the lack of people, autistic people that are actually in employment. That's often due to discrimination and failure to make reasonable adjustments for people. And that comes across in lots of other areas of life as well. One of the key ones for me is bullying, and the impact that bullying has on our community. And that will often start really young in a child's life. And that can go on to, in later life, to become things like mate crime and hate crime. And even just that discrimination within services, it has a real big impact on people. And I think we'd be able to succeed a lot more if we looked at social barriers rather than everything focusing on autism as a condition being the problem.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Reflective of the kind of people that I work with, and I'm a paediatric therapist, so most of my work is with children. I often work with young adults as well, up to the age of 25, 26, who have experienced such barriers and such negativity in their environmental experience. So we're talking about right from being very young, maybe misinformed or ill-informed adults in their lives at primary school, or you know, going forward into secondary. I think things are getting much, much better. Things have improved enormously. And there's a lot of, as you said, amazing work going on in the public sector out there. But also what I've found is the experience of the external has a huge impact on the internal experience of self. So a lot of the work that I do is about repairing broken self-identity and damaged self-worth and self-esteem. You can end up with children, young people who are really isolated, highly anxious and stressed about the world outside and who they are within it. In terms of Autistic UK, how does your organisation support people to navigate these times of barriers and issues?
Okay, right. So because we're a very small team, and we're all volunteers, we have to use our limited resources in the most beneficial way to get the most out of it. So we'll do this through engaging with the community, which was made quite difficult by the pandemic. So we had to cancel all our big events, but we started engaging through online focus groups. And we also have quite a good social media presence. We've got a number of groups, and we operate on different platforms. So we're on Twitter and we're on Facebook. We make a big effort to keep up to date with research and policy development. And we pass that on to our network, so we keep them informed of what's going on at that level. And then to enable us to sort of do more, we work in co-production a lot with other organisations. So we'll work with slightly larger organisations who have more resources. We develop involvement opportunities for autistic people that way. So, for example, we've done a lot of work with the National Autism Team in Wales, and we will, people know that there's opportunities there that they can get involved in and things like that. We do this so that we hope that then widens the representation of the autistic voice, because you'll often find just one autistic person sitting on a board. Or,
yes. It's quite tokenistic, isn't it?
It can be if you're not careful. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why I got involved in so many organisations. I was that token person. I never, even though I'm there as what they call either expert by experience or lived experience advisor, I never wanted it to be all about my experience, because then they weren't getting the views of the community. They were only getting one person's view.
I think that's really important. That comes up a lot with my guests on this show, no matter where they're coming from in terms of organization or a parent or an autistic person, that's a key theme that keeps coming up. Can I just ask, as the chair of Autistic UK, can you tell us more about, on the website, the tagline for the organization is "Nothing about autism without autistics," and I really like that. So could you explain that a bit more?
It's linked to the term "Nothing about us without us." Yes. Which the term was adopted by the disability rights movement in the early 1990s. It'd been around for a while because it was a political sort of strapline used in Poland in the 1500s originally. But you started to hear it being used by the disability rights movement in the 90s. And it was the title of a couple of books that were written by disability rights campaigners. But then in 2004, the United Nations used the phrase as the theme of International Day of Persons with Disabilities. And it's from then it's become associated with the Convention on the Rights of Disabled People. So the disabled community have adopted it, and it highlights the need for full and direct participation in all decisions that affect our lives. It's a statement that says we need to be meaningfully included. And this has been because for a long time, all disabled people receive support that was done to us or for us rather than with us.
Yes.
And that often meant that our needs weren't taken into consideration and decisions were made that affected our lives without seeking our input. So the disability rights community think it's really important that people realise that we have a voice, and that voice should be heard, and we should be sat around the table when decisions are made right from the beginning mm-hmm. of any planning process, and that we should never be a simple afterthought.
Or an add-on.
And just as you see in the wider disabled community, the autistic community doesn't always have a voice either. And there are still quite a lot of people out there who believe that they know what's best for us without even talking to us. And there are even those that choose not to listen to us. And there's a lot of barriers to engagement. The autistic community don't find it easy to engage with other people. But historically, the rhetoric around autism has very much been shaped by the needs and the voices of either our parents or our caregivers or by professionals. And it's not saying that these voices aren't important, because they are. Everybody has a right to have their views heard and to be around that table when decisions are made. But that should never, ever be at the exclusion of the actual autistic voice themselves. That statement recognises that people know what is best for them. They may need help and support to make people understand what they need, but that doesn't mean there shouldn't be adjustments and adaptations made so that those people can be included in those decisions.
Yeah.
That was a bit long-winded, but...
No, I know, but it's an important topic, so it's hard to, you know, cut it down to just a couple of words, isn't it? And be concise. I think you've explained it really well. Excuse me. And for our listeners out there, I'm assuming that you mean also you're talking about parents and carers of disabled and autistic and neurodivergent children being heard, because they know what's best for their children. So we're going to go to another break now. And then when we come back, I was going to ask you if you could talk about your experience of being autistic and a mother of autistic adults and a grandmother of an autistic grandchild. So we'll take a break.
Ever see a blind man cross the road, trying to make the other side? Ever see a young girl growing old, trying to make herself a bride? Smile.
some substance for your sake, and drink a bottle full of rye. Four and 20 blackbirds in a cake, and bake them all.
That makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, welcome back. You're listening to Evelyn Charmer on UK Health Radio. My autistic guest of this week is Willow Holloway, and she's the Executive Director and Chair of Autistic UK, along with all sorts of other organisations that she works alongside, like Disability Wales and the Integrated Autism Service in Wales as well. And she's also a mum and grandma. So welcome back, Willow.
Thank you.
And I was going to ask you then, we've been talking a lot about your representative work and how you work on behalf of and alongside lots of people who must massively benefit from your work. So on behalf of everyone listening, thank you for that. But what about your own personal experience? You're a late diagnosed autistic lady, and you've also got a son who's deaf and autistic. And you've got other children and a grandchild. So talk to us about your lovely family.
Okay, yeah. So my son is deaf. He's not diagnosed as autistic, though he does recognise quite a lot of traits within himself. It's often the thing with dual diagnosis that it's only quite recently that we've started looking at dual diagnosis. So I think actually diagnosing individuals with sensory impairment and things like that is still quite a way off. There's a lot of work to be done in that area, but that's probably another show all in itself. So my personal experience, well, I'm over 50 years old. I won't say exactly how old, but to include all the challenges that I faced pre-diagnosis, again, that would be a show all in itself. But I knew long before I received my diagnosis that I was autistic. When you face challenges, you do look for answers.
Of course, yeah.
And I experienced a lot of difficulty during my childhood. And it was difficulty with ordinary things that others seemed to find really easy. I suppose what you were talking about earlier about self-worth and self-esteem, I think that with me is what really, really took a knock. And I had, because of that low self-worth and low self-esteem coming in very young in my life, I also had very little ego. So actually getting help and support for myself, I'd been conditioned to feel that I wasn't worthy of that support, especially once I went into education, because it seemed that everything that I did was wrong. I never seemed to be able to fit or do the right thing. Teachers would ever go at me. I think I'm also ADHD. I don't have a diagnosis, but I have a lot of ADHD traits around planning and prioritizing, being able to get work done on time, things like that. So I was always in trouble in school for that reason. By the time I was seven, I'd started to what was termed in those days as play truant. If I could get out going to school, I did. Really, really hypersensitive. I've got hypersensitivity to light, sound, touch, taste. The only thing that's not hypersensitive is my interception, which okay. goes the opposite way. and that caused real, real difficulties interacting in the world. And that's been for as long as I can remember. So ironically, when I was assessed, I was expecting to be diagnosed as autistic. That didn't come as any shock at all. But to have somebody recognize my sensory differences and to sit down and explain them to me made a huge difference to me. Huge. And it has allowed me to do the work that I do now, because I can now identify sensory triggers and I know what to do to take away the risk of sensory overwhelm, because for me, the big issue is sensory overwhelm, and that impacts on everything. It impacts on my ability to communicate, impacts on my processing. Eventually, after quite a lot of life crisis, if you like, I seemed to bounce in and out of crisis for quite a few years and developed what some might call dysfunctional behaviours. I prefer to call them adaptive behaviours. I was adapting to the environment, and the way I was adapting was not always seen as socially acceptable. So things like rather than social isolation, I would isolate myself so that I didn't have to communicate. I didn't have to interact. But also looking back, I can see how the misunderstanding and mistreatment of my differences had a huge impact as well. For my diagnosis, I was highly medicated, lots of types of antidepressants, different anxiety drugs, and all of that impacted on my health and well-being. But then I started to recognize the traits in my youngest daughter at the time. I'd started working for a large learning disability charity. I was going to be working with a young autistic lady, so I did a lot of research into autism and started going, I've been doing that all my life. And that was very much from sort of the traits of autism. I'd heard of autism. It was what would have been termed in those days as classic Kanner's autism. So that's what I saw autism as. I didn't have that understanding of the spectrum or anything. But once I did, I started to sort of recognise that those traits that I'd had that I was now seeing in my daughter could actually be autism. And I started to go for a diagnosis for her. And one of the things when females go for a diagnosis, they can often be misdiagnosed with conditions such as borderline personality disorder, bipolar. And I noticed that the psychologist that she was working with was going down the line of borderline diagnosis. And I've had friends with borderline personality disorder, and I knew that was not it. And I wasn't prepared for my daughter to be given a wrong diagnosis. So I went privately for a diagnosis of my own autism, because I was very aware that there is a genetic component. Mm-hmm. So I received my diagnosis, and then a few months later, she was then diagnosed as autistic. Due to that, I suppose, that lack of self-worth again, I hadn't been expecting any support for myself as an autistic adult, but she was only just 16 at that point. And I really, really did expect that there would be some support in place for her. And instead of opening doors, it closed doors. She experienced discrimination in college. Quite a period of crisis after she received her diagnosis.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's quite common, isn't it? And I think it's not just kids that experience that. It's adults as well. You get that diagnosis and you... you look at your life through a new lens. I don't particularly like the word normal, because to me, normal's a setting on a tumble dryer.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a word that you use to describe human beings. Her first comment afterwards was, well, I've spent all these years thinking I'm normal, and now I've got to get used to this diagnosis. And number one, that made me realise how the world views autism and autistic people. It also really frustrated me that actually this support wasn't there. And in fact, there was so little understanding of the different presentations that you see in women and those that are more gender fluid. There's an issue there as well. But also that lack of support and that lack of provision. You've got individuals and families that are fighting so hard to get this diagnosis, when actually at the end of it, a lot of the time, you just get given a handful of papers and you're still on your own. So that really frustrated me. And my initial, I suppose it was my initial kick to get into advocacy. I founded a project on Facebook, which is the Autistic Women's Empowerment Project. And it's still there and it's still updated occasionally. Autistic UK are currently working with me actually to update the website so that it becomes a good information source. So that's down at the minute because we're doing a complete update, but you can still find us on Facebook. And there's a lot of information there about autistic women. It allowed me to find my identity as an autistic adult getting that diagnosis, but it also allowed me to alter my parenting methods as well. So I parent through a neurodivergent lens now.
Yes. And I think we're coming to the end of the show. I could talk to you all day. I find it fascinating listening to you, and you've got a lot of really valuable information to share with people and experience. But we need to end the show. But I just wanted to reflect back to you that, yeah, absolutely. Despite going through what you've described as lots of life crises yourself and having to really adapt to environments that weren't healthy for you, you have become a wonderful parent of neurodivergent children because of those experiences. And if you hadn't had them, the possibility that your daughter may well have been misdiagnosed, the stigma she's experienced, which is awful, and I'm very sorry to hear about in college and ongoing, may have been four times worse had she had a lack of understanding from yourself. So
I will say her life's pretty good now. She works and she's a mum herself. So
yes,
she's a long way on from that now.
So thank you for coming on the show. And it's been wonderful listening to you, Willow. And I will invite you back to talk about some of the key themes. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, they can get in touch with you via www.autisticuk.org. And if anybody wants to speak to you about any of the issues that have risen today, they can also contact you via the show. On behalf of everybody listening and the wider audience, thank you so much for coming on and being guest of the week.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I'm Evelyn Charmer. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And special thanks to our guest of the week.